Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library, yeah, standing there behind.
No mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to Books and Beyond. This is your host, Alison, and I'm joined in the studio today by Karen. Kia ora, Karen.
Kia ora, Alison.
Well, look, a couple of weeks ago we did a show about the opening lines of books because we know how important it is for a book to start strongly, the author needing to hook the reader in.
And reel them in.
To get to get their attention, particularly in this Instagram age that we live in now, we're all pulled in so many directions. But after the success and fun and humiliation, I must say, of our opening lines show, well, my humiliation, we thought it would be quite fun to do a closing lines show, and of course this fits in beautifully with my Tai Chi practice, the yin and the yang. So anything that opens must close soon afterwards. So Karen, I was wondering if you could explain to us again which I think is quite revolutionary, method of recommending books to a reader?
Yeah, actually recommending books, well, to a reader, to myself, the reader.
Yeah. So,
it's more about finding the book than recommending, but you could recommend people use this technique to find their own books. So, I explained this to you. Technique for finding a good book, and a lot of people are horrified for this. I'd say 99% of the people I tell it to are horrified by this. So first of all, I eschew all the author quotes that are on the cover of the book. So all the author quotes, I'm old and cynical, and I know enough about the publishing world by now that all that the quotes on the cover tell you are what tribe the publisher signed up this author to write for, and what other authors are also signed up with the same publisher that they can get to write a quote for the cover, an alluring quote for the cover. So you eschew the author quotes, you go for the author photo, another thing that horrifies people. But I think it's really important. If you look at this author, do they have an art gallery fringe? Are they old and bravely not operated on?
That sounds like me. You're talking about me at the moment, aren't you?
I'm talking about you looking at the author photo or in the photo?
Yes, in the photo.
And are they posing with a dog?
No. Oh, yes, that would be me.
Yeah, yes. Well, I was going to say, I had that all lined up to say I'll leave it to you to decide if that's a positive or a negative. I think with my, this is going to be really, could really be going close to the edge here, but my first thought was men posing with a dog for their author photo would probably be a thumbs down for me, but women posing with a dog would be very cool. So, and then once you've done that, you read the first paragraph and you read the last paragraph. Because I think in the first paragraph, the author is putting, it's their sort of tour de force. They've been meaning to write this book for years. They've been musing over the first line. They've kind of putting all their fireworks into it. But I feel like, and that's great. That's to see, you know, the range of their ability and so on. And then I think the last paragraph, what it does is, I'm always reminded of this story when they asked Michelangelo about carving his marble statues. And he claimed that within the block of marble, the statue was already there waiting for him. And his job was just to chip away at the marble until he revealed the form of the statue that was in the marble. Mm. And I think that when, by the time an author gets to the end of their book, they've chipped away and chipped away and chipped away, and they've really gotten to the essence. And what they're giving you is, lets you know, is this book actually going to be, in the end, a cynical book, or is it going to be a passionate book, or is it going to be a very funny book? And because we know books go with your mood. You do want to find a book that fits what you want to be reading at that moment. So, yeah, that's my technique.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's a very revolutionary style, and I'm very impressed with it. I must admit, I didn't know about this this way of choosing books until I met you.
No, so I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure anybody else has this way of choosing books, but I developed it over long years of looking at the recommended shelves, putting books on the recommended shelves in the library.
Oh, that's great. Well, look, today what we've done, we've each brought in a stack of books and we've hidden the covers from each other, of course, and we're going to read the closing lines of each one and then just in a gentle fashion, see if the other person can guess the book from its ending.
Gentle meaning non-competitive?
Yes, non-competitive. Or, yes, something like that. Now, our ground rules, of course, no Google, which we did last time. And
you mean which we didn't do? We did have that same ground rule. Yeah, we didn't Google last time either.
Yeah, so no Googling. And we've got a box of tissues at the ready for when I cry with humiliation. And
now not at the sad ending.
Yeah, or else to the sad ending.
I'm seeing a future show also about tearjerkers. But anyway, moving on.
Yes.
That comes later.
And now our listeners might wish to play along with us and see how many you can guess.
Well, we hope they will.
Now, were you going to do the first one? Or am I? I'm happy to do the first book. No, you are, aren't you? Yes, you go.
Well, it's funny because my first one is one that I'm sure you're going to get.
Oh, no.
But I brought it in just because it is my favorite. I think you always have to start with your favorite, as I said about the authors writing their books.
Yeah.
So I had to start with my favorite. This is this single line. So there's the ending, the paragraph, and there's the ending, the single line. And this single line is, to me, the most beautiful phrase ever used to end a book. And it goes like this. So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past.
Oh, dear. Now, it sounds familiar, but I'm at a loss.
Okay, I'm going to give you the few lines in front of it.
Yes.
Well, no. The few lines in front of it name the main character whose name is in the book.
But
I'll still read it to you.
Yeah.
Don't leap out, don't shriek when I read it so that everyone can hear the beauty of this ending. Gatsby believed in the green light, the orgastic future that year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. Tomorrow we will run faster, stretch out our arms farther. And then one fine morning, so we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past.
Oh, that is beautiful, isn't it? So that's by F. Scott Fitzgerald, isn't it? And it's the Great Gatsby.
The Great Gatsby with the great ending.
Yes.
So this is, for me, The Great Gatsby is actually the great American novel. There's a lot of discussion about what the great American novel is. And written in the Jazz Age, so the story full of rich hedonists. And Gatsby is the self-made man who comes out of the West and believes that he can get it all, wealth, power, and love. And, of course, he can't. So in this final scene with Gatsby looking at the green light, that's Gatsby's died. Oh, shouldn't give that away. Okay, in the final scene, Gatsby, Nick, the narrator, is remembering Gatsby looking at the green light over across the bay from his very rich villa, which he has bought himself with his business dealings and which has left him still unsatisfied and not having what he wants. And so we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past.
It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, thanks for that. Yes. See what we can do. I'm just getting to the right spot here. So, right. So I'll do the last line and see how you go. Oh, and because this one does name a character, so you probably will get this. But anyway, Yossarian jumped. Nately's whore was hiding just outside the door. The knife came down, missing him by inches, and he took off.
Wow, that's Catch-22.
Yeah.
I did get that.
Yeah.
But I've read Catch-22, and I didn't actually, I was thinking, this is Catch-22. How did it end? So how is that? The knife coming down.
But it misses him.
It misses him.
Yes. And so then he...
Give me the few lines before it, lead up.
Okay, so long, Chaplain. Thanks, Danby. How do you feel, Yossarian? Fine. No, I'm very frightened. That's good, said Major Danby. It proves you're still alive. It won't be fun. Yossarian started out. Yes, it will. I mean it, Yossarian. You'll have to keep on your toes every minute of the day. They'll bend heaven and earth to catch you. So, yes, it's sort of...
And then the knife
comes
out.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? I loved this. And I loved the satire and the absurdity.
Oh, yeah, and the characters, just in those couple of lines that you read, just remembering the Major Danby and the Chaplain and Major Major. Is Major 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 Danby? No, Major Major is
Major 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 Major
Major Major Major Major.
Yeah, which, and because I read this when I was a teenager and I was fascinated by Major 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 Major.
Yeah, he was my favorite thing too. The interesting thing is that hasn't there been like a television miniseries made out of it?
Yes.
I've heard that it was really good and I haven't seen it. Have you?
No, I haven't yet, but there was. That was only in the last year. And because they made it into a film in about 1970. And I do remember that Bob Newhart played Major, 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 Major.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And Alan Arkin is Yossarian, I believe, isn't he? I'm quite sure.
Yeah.
Armenian American playing a sign. It was perfect. Alan Arkin is one of my favorite actors.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Oh, well done.
Oh, sorry. I was before I got your praise. No, well done. I didn't well done anything. Your Sarian is your Sarian. We should have told what Catch 22 is. Next show. So are you ready for my next one?
Yeah.
So, the last line, the last pure piece of ice line is. Well, actually, the last two lines. I never saw any of them again, except the cops. No way has yet been invented to say goodbye to them.
Oh, now, I know that. But look, I'm so blank.
A hard-boiled crime novel?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to give you the paragraph ahead of
it.
So, it goes like this. So long, Señor Mayoranos. Nice to have known you, however briefly. Goodbye. He turned and walked across the floor and out. I watched the door close. I listened to his steps going away down the imitation marble corridor. After a while, they got faint. Then they got silent. I kept on listening anyway. What for? Did I want him to stop suddenly and turn and come back and talk me out of the way I felt? Well, he didn't. That was the last I saw of him. I never saw any of them again except the cops. No way has yet been invented to say goodbye to them.
Is it a Mickey Spillane?
No, it's close. It's it's Raymond Chandler, The Long Goodbye, my favorite noir novel. My favorite Raymond Chandler, my favorite noir.
The Long Goodbye.
This is Philip Marlowe, Chandler's detective hero, the famous hero who goes down mean streets without himself being mean. And it's his most powerful love affair in all the books, and it's with a man. And they don't end up in bed together. They don't end up anywhere together, as this final paragraph tells you. Philip Marlowe is betrayed by Terry Lennox, the person who's pretending to be Señor Mayoranos and walking away. And it's one of the most romantic scenes in literature. This is another scene which would have been worthwhile hearing. The one where he gets the letter from Señor Mayoranos saying that Terry is dead, and he, well, actually from Terry, saying Terry's about to be dead. I'm in a room with a gun. And he says, pour me a coffee and light me a cigarette and think of me. And so he pours two coffees and he lights a cigarette and he puts it in the ashtray and he thinks about Terry until the smoke has gone out from the cigarette, and then he wads it up and throws it away.
It's very romantic, isn't it? Oh, well, that's a good one. Okay, look, I'll try this. See, oh, I think you'll probably get this one. Okay.
Oh, the pressure.
Yes. So I'm just going to do the last line, which, I wouldn't be surprised if you get this. I have a wife, three children, a shop in the Rue du Château.
That's it?
Yeah.
That I might have be a wife, three children, a shop in the Rue du Château.
Maybe that was too hard. Okay, so we'll go up just one paragraph. A month later, I noticed a freshly printed poster on the wall of the town hall. There were five names on it, including an English name and that of Anna Kupfer. All five had been shot as spies 2 days before in the courtyard of Mézières prison. I have never been back to La Rochelle. I shall never go back. I have a wife, three children, a shop in the Rue du Château.
I don't know. Have I read this book?
You probably probably have. Now, it's The Train by Georges Simenon.
Oh, no, I haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I've actually ever read a Simenon novel of this sort. So this tells me this is something I need to read.
Yeah. So
one of his 500 novels, right?
Yeah, it's one of the 500, but it's not one of the detective ones. It's a standalone.
Right.
And it was set in 1940. So it's about a rather dull man and his family who are living in France, and they have to escape because of the advancing German occupiers, and then it's what happens after that. So, oh, I thought you'd probably know that.
No, I
but
did.
It's very good.
Yeah, I did think I could see Simone Signoret being in it if it was a movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But I love his work because it's sort of very sparse. His writing. So the books look little, but there's a lot to them.
So this fits in with my Michelangelo theory. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So I could have told that by reading the end.
Yeah.
Oh, so what's the first line of the book? Let's hear the first line.
Oh, okay. Let me just get to that part here. So the first line is, when I woke up, a yellowish light, which I knew so well, was filtering into the bedroom through the Holland curtains. Our windows...
Is that the first line?
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Got to stop.
Yeah, got to stop. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. Through the Holland curtains.
Holland curtains.
Ah.
I suppose that's like Holland blinds. Is it? Is it? I don't know.
Well, we'll find out. Well,
yeah.
We'll report back. So I'm anxious to move on to my next one.
Mm.
So this is, I'm going to give you a little more than the last line, because the last line has a pronoun in it, which makes it too unfair. So here it is. Gatwick Airport is not the best place to be gripped by a fear of flying. But it seems that this is what is happening to me now, because you are up so high in those things, and there is such a long way to fall. Then again, I have been falling for months. I have been falling into my own life for months, and I'm about to hit it now.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Now, so it's set in London. I don't know. I'm blank.
Set in London is a red herring.
Oh,
it's Irish. It's a very Irish novel. It's
yes.
The Gathering by Anne Enright.
Oh,
so this is
course.
A book just fairly, it seems really recently to me that it won the Booker Prize. It was actually 10 years ago or something. But so this is the story of this family. It's very Irish. Getting together at their mother's home in Ireland when one of the siblings has died. And they get together, and there's mysteries. Is a suicide, and there's mysteries about that, and about their own lives and their relationship with each other, and so on. And especially the mystery at the heart of the unhappiness in the brother's life. And this is amazing, because to me, when you see this, there's another part just ahead of it, which I won't read the whole thing, but she's got this description of herself, the narrator, who's the sister of the man who's died. And she describes herself at Gatwick Airport in the queue as a woman with no luggage, no sharp objects, and nothing I haven't packed myself. I just want to be less afraid. And when I say, you know, you get to the essence of the book, so I'm saying for Anne Enright, you know, sharp and brilliant. And I also want to say hard as nails. I'm not sure if that's a thing that people like to hear about authors, but
because
it was a hard book to read. It was a very, very hard book to read, but very good, very brilliant.
Right. I haven't read that. I've read other works of hers, and I've loved them.
Was she hard as nails in all those books? Because the narrator is hard as nails, and so I thought maybe she was just impersonifying. Inhabiting the narrator extremely well.
Yeah, I don't.
She know tender that she at was. All in the other books you've read.
I thought she was.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So there
but,
you go.
Interesting. Oh, well, I didn't get that one, but I do want to read that now. It sounds really good. Okay, let's give this one a go. Okay, so see how we go. It is Clarissa, he said, for there she was.
Mrs. Dalloway.
Oh, yes. I thought you'd get that because of the character's name.
Yeah, so for the joy of our listeners, let's have the paragraph.
Yes, the paragraph before it. Oops, I've just lost my place, so... Where do we go? Yes, so, for her father had been looking at her as he stood talking to the Bradshaws, and he had thought to himself, who is that lovely girl? And suddenly he realised that it was his Elizabeth, and he had not recognised her. She looked so lovely in her pink frock. Elizabeth had felt him looking at her as she talked to Willie Titcomb. So she went to him and they stood together, now that the party was almost over, looking at the people going and the rooms getting emptier and emptier with things scattered on the floor. Even Ellie Henderson was going nearly last of all, although no one had spoken to her. But she had wanted to see everything to tell Edith. And Richard and Elizabeth were rather glad it was over, but Richard was proud of his daughter. And he had not meant to tell her, but he could not help telling her. He looked at her and said, and he had wondered, who is that lovely girl? And it was his daughter. Blah, blah, blah. Because it's actually was a really feminist novel, I felt.
Yeah. You know, there's a whole swirl of activity around Mrs. Dalloway, and including people who've recreated her taxi ride. You know, when she goes out, it is Mrs. Dalloway, isn't it, where she goes to get the flowers?
Yes.
Isn't that the very opening line, is yes. I must get the flowers. What is it?
Where is it? Oh, introduction.
Something, trying to think, where will I get the flowers? Well, I must have the flowers back by noon. Or where will the flowers, who's got the flowers?
Gosh, this introduction is so...
Right, it's a modern library edition.
Yes,
that's
a note on the text. Oh, Mrs. Dalloway said she would buy the flowers herself.
Yeah, great opening line.
Yes,
well done, Virginia.
Yes, but it's great, isn't it? Highly recommended.
Okay, now I'm going to do exactly the same thing, which is that I'm naming a character here, so you will get this right away, but it is, I had to bring this because this is one of the greatest opening lines in literature, closing lines in literature, and it's actually started up a whole school of... And added a whole new term into our literary culture. So it goes like this. But I reckon I got to light out for the territory ahead of the rest, because Aunt Sally, she's going to adopt me and civilize me, and I can't stand it. I've been there before.
I was going to say The Catcher in the Rye, but...
Aunt Sally? Okay, I'll give you the time period. 1884, this book was published. A little boy, okay, I'll read you the very, so this is actually the second to the last line, because the very last line is, the end, yours truly, Huck Finn.
Oh.
This is such a great, light out for the territory. This was actually, you know how you hear that, it's in No Country for Old Men, he says, we're lighting out for the territory.
Oh,
people say, use this phrase. That's actually Mark Twain who invented that, light out for the territory. It's such a great phrase. And I'll just add this. The paragraph ahead of it is refers to Tom. I could have left this in, and then you would have heard about Tom and Aunt Sally. Would that have done it for you?
I think
probably.
It's the Aunt Sally.
So,
I couldn't.
Well,
place.
Because Aunt Sally is the minor aunt. There's another aunt.
Oh,
in the anyway,
okay.
it was Tom's aunt, not Becky. Becky Thatcher was the friend. Aunt Polly, isn't it? Aunt Polly is the one that's always with Tom. Anyway, Tom's most well now. This is the joy of Huck Finn. Huck Finn is so got such clear wits about him. He's the son of the drunk. I'm sure you know all this. You've read it.
I have.
He's an outcast, but he has these great. Clear wits, and he survives that way, even going against what society is always saying he should do, and people like Aunt Sally. And in comparison, he actually, in the course of Huck Finn, of the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, he recognizes that Tom is always going to adhere in the end to the conventions of society. And so the second to the last paragraph is this. Tom's most well now and got his bullet around his neck on a watch guard for a watch and is always seeing what time it is. And so there ain't nothing more to write about, and I am rotten glad of it, because if I'd have knowed what a trouble it was to make a book, I wouldn't have tackled it, and it ain't a going to no more.
Mm.
Did I read that badly? And ain't a going to no more. If I wouldn't have tackled it, and ain't a going to no more.
That, I think that gives me more context to the time period as well. Mm.
Okay, let's hear your next one.
Yeah, so my next one is... Okay, so I'll do the actual last line. He imagined Maui to have been happy in his death.
He imagined who?
Maui.
He imagined Maui to have been happy in his death. Mm, so a shame. Clearly a New Zealand title.
Yeah.
don't know.
Okay, see if I go up a little bit.
If I can refresh your memory, as they say in the police.
Oh, yes.
Interviews.
Yes, can I just refresh? Yes, I ask people to refresh my memory quite often too. So his satchel, papers flapping here. His satchel was under the seat. He pulled it up, unzipped it, and searched through his papers for the 7 poems he had written about her. As he read them, she came alive again. Then he tore up each poem carefully. He had nothing to regret, nothing to look forward to. All was well. He was alive at a new beginning. He was free of his dead. He took out his pen, and on the cover of the slick Technicolor tourist brochure, which he found in the plastic bag of airline gifts that the smiling hostess had given him, he wrote in large letters, "And Hine Nui Te Pō woke up and found him in there." And she crossed her legs, and thus ended man's quest for immortality. He imagined Maui to have been happy in his death.
Oh, my God. This is absolutely a book that I would have, from reading that, I would have picked up and taken home. But I don't believe I've read it. What is it?
So it's Sons for the Return Home by
Albert Wendt. Oh, my God. That's true. This is actually a book of his that I'm lacking. I read The Adventures of Vela. I have not read this. And this is the first book. Wasn't his first novel?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I absolutely have to before I die. What a great ending.
It was a beautiful ending, wasn't it?
You can see he's a poet as well as a novelist, can't you?
Yeah. This was a beautiful book. So highly recommended. And it was very groundbreaking, I do believe, at the time.
Very groundbreaking in speaking truth to power.
Yes, that's right.
And being a new voice and not a European one.
That's right. Yeah. And it talked about this sort of racism that exists in the New Zealand society. Yeah.
I actually hurt when I think about Albert Wendt coming over, what was he, like 13, and being put into Wellington College, Wellington, some boys' school in Wellington. I just, coming over from Samoa and being put into this Wellington boys' school, I just think of what, I hurt. I actually, it makes me hurt.
And just to think about the cold weather.
Yeah,
too,
so that was like 1950-something, right? Are we saying, I believe?
Yes. It was published in the early 70s.
No, I mean when Albert Wendt was sent over to be in boys' school in Wellington.
It was the 50s, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, well, since we're on sad endings, I've got one for you here. So here's the last line. "Yes," I said, "isn't it pretty to think so?" You've never read this book because I've got to read Sons for the Return Home. You have to read this. This is The Sun Also Rises.
Oh!
This is Hemingway's best book his best writing is his short stories, but of his novels, this is the only one that really transcends its period.
And I have read it.
Here's how it goes. So Jake and Brett are in the taxi. It says, "Oh, Jake," Brett said, "we could have had such a damned good time together." Ahead was a mounted policeman in khaki directing traffic. He raised his baton. The car slowed, suddenly pressing Brett against me. "Yes," I said. "Isn't it pretty to think so?"
I do recognize it now. Though I'd read it,
It's the manifesto of the lost generation. So, in fact, in the beginning, the epigraph of the book is Gertrude Stein's comment to Hemingway, "You are all the lost generation."
Oh, yes.
You being, of course, the generation that had fought in World War I, and so many of them had died that the others were just left disoriented, directionless, aimless. So something to remind us of some aspects of our time as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, look, to end our show about endings, Karen had suggested that we read the most famous final lines in modern literature. So I'm going to hand over to Karen to do that. But just before we go, just a reminder that the books mentioned today will be available on our show notes. So all the best. Haere rā, ka kite anō, and I'll hand over to Karen.
Are we going to say where these lines are from? We'll say these are the final lines to the first modern novel, Ulysses. "And then I asked him with my eyes to ask again, yes, and then he asked me, would I, yes, to say yes, my mountain flower, and first I put my arms around him, yes, and drew him down to me so he could feel my breasts, all perfume, yes, and his heart was going like mad, and yes, I said, yes, I will, yes. was brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.